for all that is Star Wars The Old Republic related.
I'm going to regret this. You watch your language.
Well, hey, welcome to the second edition of the Button Mashes the Empire podcast. As always, my name is Ray, and with me is Mike. Mike, how's it going today?
Not too bad.
Good. And also with me, we have returning from last week's hot seat, we have Nikki. Nikki, how's it going?
Hello.
Well, we're going to cover a few things today. We're going to be covering crew skills, how the best way to make money. We're going to be covering another edition of the hot seat, and Mike is bringing in again his greetings from the future segment, as well as we'll also hit the MMO water cooler, kind of hit what's kind of going on. And first off, crew skills, how to make money. Every crew skill has the ability to make money, whether it's a lot or little depends on what it is and its true usability. Now, the best way to make credits that I found so far through both research and through actual implementation is slicing. With slicing, you have your missions where you send people out on to pick up lockboxes. Now, every time I've done it, and everything I've read about it as well, just to verify, make sure it wasn't just me, as say it costs, 500 credits to send them out for a lockbox. Well, then you get a lockbox, and there's always more than what it costs. So say you send them out for, it costs 500 credits to send them out. When they come back in, they give you a lockbox that had, say, 850 credits. So you're always making a continuous profit. So that's like easy money without any effort. Now, at the same time, with slicing, when you send them out, they have a good chance to come back with other items, mainly with your mission discovery items. Usually it's always blues or epics, which those, if you don't have those specific missions, sell really well. You make a lot of credits that way. I know I myself have had an epic mission discovery pattern that sold for 22,000 credits. So you could easily make a lot of credits through slicing. Another way to do it is through scavenging. Scavenging is another good one. It also brings you in some of those high-priced items that you can only get through scavenging, just like you can only get those items through those epics or blues through slicing. And the other good one is treasure hunting, because treasure hunting and scavenging also bring you in the companion gifts. That's the only way you can get the high-level companion gifts, like the blues and the purples. Those are pretty much the only way you can get those. Now, if you're not really interested in raising up your companion's level, your affection level, turn around and put those on the auction house, and again, you'll see huge returns on those. I've looked those up, and I've seen some of them going as high as 22,000 credits, or a little bit more. So again, if you get those blues or those purples, you're going to make a ton of money in the auction house, and those are really the only way to get those specific items is through those crew skills. Now, the other crew skills, like the ones where you make your armor, or you make your parts, your modifications for your lightsabers, or any of those crew skills, they make you money in kind of a different way, because you can make your offhands, or you can make your armaments, or you can make your saber hilts or whatnot. You can make all these different items and use them. So you're going to save money that way, because you're going to be actually using everything you make yourself. That way, anything you get through drops or quest items, quest turn-ins, you can just turn around and either put those up on the Galactic Marketplace, I can never remember what it's called, or just vendor them, because that's where you're going to make your money that way. Because with the other professions or the other crew skills, you can make money putting them up for sale, but really, it's really hard to make a lot of good money that way, because a lot of other people are making those for themselves. And granted, offhands aren't that common compared to a lot of the other pieces of gear, so if you make them, you can sell them decently, but you're not going to make the money you're going to make through slicing, scavenging, or treasure hunting. So really, if you're really into making the money with your crew skills, those are the three you really want to hit. the other ones have, you know, have huge advantages if you're looking for something you can make for yourself, so you don't have to worry about where am I going to get this, how am I going to upgrade that. You can just make your upgrades as you go, and then turn around and sell everything you pick up. So you're going to make money that way.
What three are you suggesting?
The best ways to make money are slicing, scavenging, and treasure hunting.
I don't have any of those.
If you don't have any and you have a profession or a career skill that you're not really working on, I highly recommend dumping it and picking up one of these. Because like I said, I've got slicing, and I spend the entire day whenever I'm questing or out there hitting missions or even running war zones, I'm at the point where I can send out four of my crew at any time, and all of them are always out there getting me lockboxes. And in a day, just through lockboxes, I was able to make about 150,000 credits, just constantly sending them out for lockboxes. That doesn't include the amount I was picking up through quests or just, you know, destroying the enemy and looting their bodies, you know. That's just the lockboxes. So it's really easy to make a lot of credits that way.
That's crazy. Because I use Biochem, Bioanalyst, and Diplomacy. And the Diplomacy, I get affection gifts that you give your crewmates, and I sell those very well.
Oh, awesome. See, from what I could tell, I didn't see where Diplomacy brought those in as well. So that'd be another one that you could pick up that would bring in a good amount, because those crew, like I said, those companion affection gifts, depending on which ones they are, as far as the blue quality, they sell halfway decent, anywhere between 1,500 and 5,000 credits. And if you get the purple ones, those are the ones that usually sell for a lot. Especially if you get the level 5 ones, those are the ones that are going to bring in the huge amount of money.
And my biochem is kind of like your, I don't know how to, like flower picking from Warcraft, I guess. It mostly you're just picking up biological items, and you know, I find mushrooms and I can get samples from animals I've killed, but I sell a lot of the extras that I have, and you'll have extras.
What have you heard about, so if biochem is the one that you are gathering with, I guess bioanalysis is the kind of the crafting end of that process. How is that towards endgame? Because everyone's looking for stims, everyone's looking for that little bit of an edge when they do endgame PvP or they do endgame operations. What have you heard about how profitable that is with high-end either biochem or bioanalysis for making things like that and making a profit there?
Well, I'm still leveling it up, so a lot of the times I just reverse engineer it. But I do put some of the stims up there. I noticed the medical ones, they don't really sell because you get those when you're questing. But the adrenals, I just am able to make the blue adrenals now, and those sell very well in the auction house.
Awesome.
That's cool. You know, you're always going to have, you're definitely always going to have a need for those. But like you said, it's going to be mainly focused in the, lack of a better term, the end game area, as far as people at the end are going to want to use those for their heroic runs or their operations runs, because, well, let's face it, you really should have those anyways when you're running those. But as far as your normal mission running or anything else, stuff like that isn't really going to bring a big profit. Same thing with making the gear, making the armor, making the modifications, making the hilts. Really, as you're leveling through, it just doesn't bring in a lot of money, because first off, you tend to level past the usefulness of that specific item, so you're just not going to make a lot of money on it that way. But you know, naturally, when you get to the end game, you're going to make a lot more, because everybody wants them, everybody needs them, which is the way it should be. You know, you should be getting these, you should be buying these. And granted, there's a lot of them that are available through just the vendor, but there's always the ability to get a better price, better quantities, the perfect ones you're actually looking for, by buying them off the galactic market.
Well, I know in biochem there's a lot of reusable adrenals that are purple, and so you'll just buy the one that you want, and you'll be able to use it over and over and over and over again instead of buying stacks and stacks of the blue ones. And Biochem also makes implants. And I think once you get up a little higher into the blues and the purples, being able to make and sell those, you're going to be very profitable. So you kind of have to suck it up at the beginning, picking up, you know, the mushrooms and rifling through animal waste and wait till you get up until the
blues
and the purples.
You make it sound so appealing.
Well, you know, the way they describe some of the things you're picking up, I'm like, oh, I know this is poo. I'm going to make Mako do it.
Well, cool. You know, it just really falls back to, if you want to make money as you're leveling, you know, the three to really get are slicing, scavenging, or actually the four now would be the slicing, scavenging, treasure hunting, and like you said, diplomacy. You're going to want to make sure you pick up other skills. First off, you're going to want to pick up ones that are actually going to benefit you. Plus, like you said, at end game, there's always going to be certain ones that are going to benefit you a lot at end game, like making those stims and whatnot. Now, you said those reusable ones. Are they anything like in some of the other MMOs that I've tried where the reusable ones are great because you don't have to keep buying them, but they're not as good, say, instead of giving you, you know, let's just throw a number out there, say 500 extra strength, it only gives you 300 extra strength, but you can reuse it since it's reusable. You don't ever have to keep buying them. Do you know if they're just as good, or if they're a little bit not quite as good, but you can keep reusing, so you save money that way?
I don't really know. I'm assuming they're going to be that way, because why would you even buy the disposable ones if this purple one was just as good and you didn't have to buy more? It makes sense that it would be reusable, but a little lesser.
And see, that's what I was thinking, but I wasn't sure because I haven't actually seen the information on those reusable ones. So I was just wondering if you knew or not. Well, that's cool. I would assume that they would be less, but I'll have to look into that since getting close to hitting operations now.
Well, I'm looking at them right now, and a prototype bio-enhanced fortitude stem, which is a level 24 blue, and it increases endurance by 42 and defense by 17 for 120 minutes. But the reusable bio-enhanced fortitude stem, which is level 40 or 24 also, and it's purple, it increases endurance by 42 and defense by 17 for 60 minutes. So it looks like it lasts half as long, but it gives you the same stats.
Okay. Well, that makes sense.
That seems like something they're going to change later, I guess.
Yeah, there have been little tweaks in the recent patches on kind of the economics of the game. I think as BioWare kind of settles in and figures out what's what, they were jiggling the speeder prices and the licensing costs, I think, in the most recent patch. So I think you're right in saying that, you know, this is probably something that's going to be looked at in the future of this doesn't make any sense from an economics point of view. And have it jiggle a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would can go on record saying I wouldn't mind them adjusting the prices of the speeders since you brought it up, the price of the piloting licenses, because it's not hard to make money, but 330,000 credits to buy the piloting rank 3 is a little crazy in my book. But
it's not
again,
that hard to save up.
No, it's not. But I just think that's a little, I don't know, a little crazy for. Because it's not like, see, the reason, what I'm getting at is, to go from piloting 1 to piloting 2, there's a big speed increase. So there's a big price jump. But then to go from 2 to 3, you're jumping up, what is it, like 120,000 credits, but the speed increase isn't that big. You know, it's just, it doesn't seem very, I don't know, even as far as the money you're putting out versus the amount of speed increase. Because you're paying an additional 330,000 credits to go, what is it, an extra 10% faster?
But the speeders are cooler.
I 100%
agree. It's a high-level credit sink is what it is. They don't want you to have 45 million credits. They
I want that.
Well, then don't buy one. You know, it's not going to be that, if it's not that big of a speed increase, and you want to have 45 million credits, don't buy one.
All right, well, you guys both know me well enough to know that there's no way I'm going to save up 45 million credits when there are speeders out there to be bought.
Yeah, that's going to be a problem.
Okay. So, I think that about covers the crew skills. You guys have any questions about the crew skills or anything before we move on?
Oh, I'm sure we'll keep talking about it.
We'll come back around to it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, back in the proverbial hot seat is Nikki. Nikki, what are you covering today?
I am here to talk to you about space battles.
Awesome. All right. Well, what about space battles? What makes them so special about special enough to go over them?
Well, I think there's a lot of confusion with space battles on how to do them and how the barrel roll incorporates into it and where to buy extra stuff for your armor for your ship. And what the hell to do with the fleet commendations?
I completely agree. I know up until, I think it was yesterday, I knew I was getting the fleet commendations, but I had no idea where the heck to go spend them or what I could spend them on.
And thank God there are smarter people out there than me, because I had no idea what to do with the fleet commendations. I had to Google it and go to 5 different websites before I found somebody who was like, this is where the fleet commendation guy is, and here's the things you can buy. I had no, I've had like 100 of them, but no idea what to, I just look at them and spread them out on the table sometimes and admire how shiny they are, because I have no idea what to do with them.
Use them for coasters, that sort of thing.
Right. But there's a, he's called the Starship Upgrades. Now I'm Empire. So in the Imperial Fleet, you can find him in the Galactic Trade Market along the Outer Rim. And he's with in the same room with the speeders. And some of the things, like, I don't believe you can buy anything with the fleet commendations until level 25. But they've got some fancy, fancy things in there. And I don't know if you've done a space battle, but you've seen the little boxes that appear below on your screen that are empty. Because you only use your mouse to fire missiles or phasers. But when the things you can buy with those fleet commendations go in there, in those little empty squares, and you can fluctuate between increasing your shields faster, like if there's nothing around and you want your shields to regen a little quicker because you're really getting hit, you can click on that and it'll regen them, I think, twice as fast. And then when you're under a heavy fire, you can switch it over to... I believe it's your missiles shoot a little, they like to do a little bit more damage, and you can flip between the two all while you're firing your phasers and your missiles.
Oh, nice.
Oh, awesome.
Yes, which makes some of them way, way easier. Because there were some space battles that I didn't even get 30 seconds into it, and my ship just blew up. Like, Mako's like, we're gonna do some serious welding because compartment B is over there. So, but it definitely get the armor, and you think, you know, maybe I'll just do the gray quests because I don't have any armor. No, it doesn't work that way, because even if you're level 15 and you just got your ship and you can only do one or two of the space battles, when you're level 45, you can still do those space battles and you'll still get quests for them. And they appear gray when you pick them up. More things open up in that space battle to make it more challenging. And when you first run through it, you only have to shoot, you know, 20 ships and, you know, 2 shield generators at level 15. But by level 45, you have to hit 100 ships, you know, destroy 3 of the shield generators, and then there's 2 more bonuses on top of that. So they're always changing, and you always have to be better and better and better to be able to get those done.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, don't be afraid to shoot anything that moves. Some things that don't in the space battles. I know the some of the ones where you're attacking the station, there's a big antenna underneath that station that you can shoot with missiles. That's kind of a little bit of a hidden bonus mission that you can get.
Yeah, I noticed that. I was running that. And that same mission you're talking about, I noticed that there's a bonus mission showing up now at the level I'm at, to where the little orbital stations periodically throughout the surrounding area, you can knock out 4 of those and get a bonus mission.
Awesome.
Yeah, I was really surprised. I didn't know that. And I thought, I'm feeling like I just failed this last two space missions and I did horrible. I'm going to go back and do cartel listening posts just to, you know, make myself feel like I can complete one of these things. And here a bonus thing popped up after I shot down one of the like the shield generators, the big things that float off to the sides. And there's a bonus, now that I'm level 45, there's a bonus mission now to shoot all four of those. And instead of 30 ships, you have to shoot 75. And I can't do it. And you have to hit like 30 more of the turret on the other ships along with the basic things that you had to do was get the shield generators and the turrets and the landing bay docks. And I can't, I mean, it's a great quest, and I can't do it. I can't get them all done.
That's nice how they make it more and more challenging. Because I know as you level up, say you start off with, your ship starts off with, like, what is it, like 15 missiles. And by the time you upgrade it to, I think it's rank 5, like your missile magazine goes from 15, and rank 5 is, I think, 150 missiles. So it's good to see that they're adding more and more stuff to put more and more of those missiles to good use.
Yeah, I'm glad that you don't really level out of those space missions. I really like the fact that you can keep going back to do them.
Cool.
Very cool. I know since I was finally I finally got my video card upgraded because I was unable to run the space missions. They were so laggy that by the time I would see something coming into screen that I was going to be able to take out for one of my missions, it had already jumped off the screen. So I've this weekend I was finally able to upgrade that video card, and I've been running the space battles like crazy, just really enjoying them. I think they did a really good job with using the tube shooter style, because it allows you to really focus on all kinds of other things in the space mission. Instead of having to worry about going through a specific area, it takes you through there, and then you can just focus on, you know, what you need to take out.
I've heard a lot of criticism about it not being able to free to fly. I couldn't imagine how many asteroids I would hit if I had to control where the ship goes. Because just being on the rail, you know, you're not controlling where the ship goes, but you can control, you can move side to side and up and down to avoid asteroids. But man, some of them are really, really difficult to avoid.
You know, Mako complains about my flying enough as it is. Never mind if you can actually go all over the place.
She is insane. Because in the back of my ship, she's like, we're taking heavy damage. I'm like, oh, shields are at full. And we're still at 100% health. What ship are you in?
See, I'm lucky. I fly with Vet. And she's like, you know, the only time she complains really is when their shields are getting low. She's the one that's out there just taking them out, so... You guys need to upgrade your co-pilot.
I need to get Blizz in my co-pilot because I can't understand anything he's saying.
That's right. You want the little Jawa steering the ship.
Hey, he could fix it while he's flying it.
Who does the voice for Blizz? Like, I feel bad for these voice actors in Star Wars because who goes, beep, 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 beep. Like, you bring the script home, and you're like, look, honey, I'm going to be in the Star Wars game. Here's my script. And she's like, who typed this? You have to say, Shamana kolalama yai na. Oh, okay, let's practice that.
You know, this is why I don't try to get into this, to the voice acting thing. Because you see what I would have to put up with. If I brought home a script like that,
I would laugh. I would laugh so much. I don't know what that Twi'lek said to me, but she wants 40 credits for it.
Well, cool. Well, awesome. I'm a lot of good information about the space battles. It's good to know that they're constantly evolving. Because I know, just to get experience, I did find out that going back and doing those gray ones, if you just do it, you only get like, at level 45, you only get like 5 experience, but if you do the quest for it off the board, you do get that big chunk of experience by completing the quest. So it's cool to know that they do that they do kind of evolve into something more challenging. That's good to know.
You don't get very much experience, but you get a ton of credits. I've got, depending on how many bonus missions you do, I've gotten between 2,000 and 5,000 credits just to fly around and shoot stuff. And then you get between 1 and 3 of the fleet commendations, which you can go spend to make your ship better. Who doesn't want a cooler ship?
I do.
I don't know. The Sith Warrior ship is pretty cool as is, though.
And I have a complaint about the ship. BioWare, if you're listening, why can I not get into the escape hatch?
You want to fire yourself out of an escape pod?
Yes, I do.
Just take Mako, go, hey, would you go clean the escape pod for me? Seal it and shoot her off. Well, cool. All right, Mike. Well, I see you have more information from the future for us.
A little bit. This will be our second go at the greetings from the future. There's been a little bit more information coming out as to what we can expect in patch 1.2, which we're expecting to hit either this month or possibly in April, depending on what BioWare can get done in the next few weeks. In particular, BioWare was talking in their latest community FAQ a little bit about the legacy system. We've heard about the legacy system in terms of what they're bringing to the table for new races and class combos and possibly new companions. But this week, what they offered up was that you're going to be able to customize your ship a little bit, in that you'll no longer need to drop out of your ship and go through 3 loading screens and over the river through the woods to get to Grandma's house and the mailboxes and the Galactic Trade Network that's in the fleet. You can, through the legacy system, add these items to your ship. What BioWare was saying was that they still want the fleet to be kind of the hub of activity. And I think that they'll certainly get that with all of your trainers there. But that a lot of people are kind of clamoring for easier access to, I think, really the trade system, being able to post and bid on things and be able to get them for use with a mailbox. They've also said that the full details of the legacy system are to be announced real soon now, which I think is kind of a play on the classic Blizzard soon, which is sometimes, you know, sometime better than sooner or later or we're
whenever we feel
it.
Like it.
Yeah.
So I'm expecting that that's probably going to drop maybe in a week, maybe two. Certainly in advance of patch 1.2, so that people can kind of start, for lack of a better term, salivating at what they'll be able to do in terms of, you know, adding a companion or tweaking their ship out or, you know, making some changes here and there. One of the other things that BioWare mentioned, they were responding to a question about being able to purchase a new ship. And they offered up that a lot of the class quests and a lot of the companion interactions are really tied to the interiors of your class ship, be it, you know, the luxury liner that the Imperial agent has taken for their own personal use, or the mantis that the bounty hunter has, that you're kind of tied into the visual background of the ship, and that the interiors would be much harder to change from that point of view and to keep the story kind of consistent. But what they've offered up is that they're definitely keeping it in mind to try to be able to customize things within the ship a little bit, and also the exterior of the ship to more make the player feel like the ship is theirs, that they've had a chance to kind of trick it out the way they'd like to.
Well, that sounds cool.
That sounds amazing. Like, I have a bounty hunter, and I love my ship. That's where I go to get my rested experience and to just hang out with my crew. I love it in there. I'd love to have more stuff to personalize it more.
Yeah, I think it'd be neat to you know, have some individual decorations. I know I never played it, but my understanding is that Galaxies was very good about being able to customize your personal house or a structure, And I think it'd be neat to be able to kind of pull that a little bit into this system where the ship is where you live, or the ship is the thing that you get to customize to that level, if you will, and make it your own. There is still some talk about what BioWare would like to bring to the table for guild features in the upcoming patches. In responding to a question, a guild member said, you know, I'd like to know when other people in the guild level up. I'd like to be able to congratulate them that they're making progress in their character, or that they're in an operations and they took down the end boss of the operation, or they took down a world boss to maybe get global guild announcements worked into the game. And BioWare said, you know, that's really something that we're looking at, and being able to let guild members know, you know, how things are going for each other. So that's something we should keep an eye out for.
That'd be nice.
That would be nice.
I know it was really nice playing Warcraft, where they had the guild announcement every 10 levels. It'd pop up and say, you know, like, Edenvale has hit, you know, level 20. And, you know, and as well as those guild achievement, those achievements you'd get when doing the either the instances or the raids would pop up when it was a guild run. You know, you'd get the achievement. I always thought those were nice. So I would like to see those in Star Wars. Just kind of a little rallying thing to kind of get the guild kind of excited that the guild's doing this or the guild members are doing that. It'd be a nice little kind of a rallying thing, I think.
Yeah, I think that the launch features for the guilds was a little short of where a fully developed and fully fleshed out MMO has been for the past year or two. But I think that patch 1.2, they're really looking to make up a lot of that ground. I think that BioWare probably felt a lot of pressure to get the game out in 2011 and had to make some choices as to what makes release and what doesn't, and what's our priority for our first big patch. And I think mm-hmm. that they're seeing that they want to bring more of the first couple of M's into the game, and instead of making it a great single-player game, to build in some of those social features and kind of really expand upon that.
It makes sense to wait for the social things, because most people start a game. You know, there are a couple of guilds out there who had dozens of people already in them before the game launched, but I would say most people just bought the game and maybe played with a friend or two or by themselves, and then started meeting people and joining guilds and joining groups. And then now that it's been a couple months, let's start introducing the social things so that they can build their guild up a little higher. Hopefully achievement points in Star Wars matter a little bit more than they did in Warcraft.
Because somebody sat on 9,000 points of them and wanted to mean something.
9,990 is how many achievement points I had before I stopped. And they matter as much as they did when I was playing as they do now.
That much, huh?
It would be neat. You know, I know that Star Wars has plans for all this social things and guild houses and guild ships and whatnot, and it'd be neat to, you know, if you have this achievement, not necessarily achievement points, but if you've done this as a guild, you'll be able to get this for your house. Or if, you know, if you've had three of the four people you need in a group, or six of the eight that you need in a raid, you'll be able to purchase this fun thing that doesn't really matter, but, you know, it's a disco ball. You can hang it in your ship and have parties. You know, I think it would be really neat to be able to purchase things with the things you do together.
Yeah, I'm hoping that on an individual basis that the player is rewarded through the legacy system for all the time that you spend in the game, going back and doing those sorts of things, of going back and finding all of the datacrons, filling out your codex, that time is rewarded with some legacy experience points that you can put towards your individual desires of how do you want to decorate your ship, or, you know, I want this new companion, or I want to add the Galactic Trade Network chip to my ship, or something like that. And that you kind of the same options that you're talking about, Nikki, that the things that you do together as a guild, benefit the guild that, you know, I don't know that they've talked about housing, but they've talked about your capital ships, maybe, that maybe we've got a hall of fame, if you will, in the middle of the ship that shows, you know, where we took down this operation, or, you know, kind of almost like a rogues gallery, if you will, of past kills by the guild. That would be kind of cool, but we'll see. You know, I think BioWare, they've got their Guild Summit upcoming, I think, this week, and they're hopefully listening to the feedback that they get out of that to make improvements to the game.
I hear that the Guild Summit, some of it is going to be live streamable on SOTOR's website, so check that out. I'm looking forward to, and it's going to be live streaming for free, from what I understand. I'm looking forward to see what their announcements are going to be for guild things in the game.
Yeah, I hope that if they're taking the time to have a guild summit, that there's something out there for the guilds to really sink their teeth into, how to make this a real symbiotic relationship between the players and the developers, to make this a game that everyone's happy with. So there's also a few still quality of gaming life changes that BioWare is making that they talked about a little bit in their most recent community fact. There's been some talk, particularly in PvP, when you've got a lot of quick movement and a lot of things going on, that a lot of people have asked to be able to turn the smart camera off, which evidently is not so smart. So that you have a little bit better control as to where you're looking and not whipping around due to an alt tab or some other, you know, kind of diverting your attention from where you want it to be. So that should be coming up in 1.2. They've talked a little bit about quicker access to the space docks or planets with space docks. So if you go to Hutta, for example, you've got to go to, you fly your ship to Hutta, and then you dock it within the space dock, and then you take a little shuttlecraft from the space dock down to the actual planet surface, whereas if you go to Narshada, you actually fly into the space dock and then you can just walk out to the planet surface. And there's been some feedback that, you know, stopping at the space dock is a little inconvenient for, I've got to run here and then I've got to go through this load screen and then I got to run here and kind of over the river and through the woods to Grandma's house and the space dock. That they're looking at ways to speed that process up. They don't want it to be as simple as a fleet pass where you just automatically teleport to your ship, but they do want to speed it up possibly. One of the last things that they talked about in the most recent community fact was an ability to look at your item enhancements, your hilts and barrels and mods and enhancements. Because right now, if you get one from a quest item or you're looking at one at a vendor, you're kind of scratching your head as to, is that better than the one that I have on, you know, this piece of armor? Or is that enhancement an upgrade? Or do I just want to give that to my companion? And they have said that it's a little bit of a low priority as other things in the UI get looked at. But they're definitely listening to what the community has to say, that, you know, this is something that people would like to be able to get a better hold on in terms of upgrades, especially for your epic gear that has item enhancement slots, and also your orange gear, if you will, your total armor slots and weapons that are dependent on these item enhancements for their stats. And a neat throwaway that they had is that they'd also like to at some point incorporate mini games into the larger game of Star Wars. In particular, two were mentioned that I saw. One was Swoop Racing, which I wasn't familiar with, but I guess it's a supposedly safer version of pod racing. So I guess it's pod racing, but with speeders.
And no sand people.
And no sand people shooting at you for those that might have played Pod Racer.
Yeah.
And also they've talked about Pazak, which is kind of a version of Blackjack for Star Wars, which I thought would be neat. You've got the casino on Narshada, that has what looks to be almost like a full setup, but nothing's clickable, nothing's interactable. I think it'd be neat, you know, to have some sort of light gambling ability within the game, like a Pazak or something like that. That, you know, you're not going to have Atlantic City Star Wars, but
spent 4 hours in Star Wars today, and all I did was play with Tatooine Hold'em.
You know, but something that can bring a little flavor to the game. You saw the cantinas in Mos Eisley. You know that the Millennium Falcon was won on a bet. You know that to bring a little bit of texture to the game, if you will. And I think that'd be something neat. I don't know how soon we're going to see it, but it's something definitely to look for in the future.
I think that'd be really cool. I mean, I know personally walking into that casino on Nar Shaddaa, I was a little disappointed that there was nothing going on. You just kind of like an empty casino.
You couldn't even sit at a table. I would have loved to have sat at one of the card tables and at least pretended I was playing.
It would have made some great screenshots.
Yeah.
But I would love to see that. Now going back a little bit on your item enhancement comparison you were talking about. I personally would love to see that because I know I'm one of those ones that's like, oh, is this better? So then I have to go and right click and open up my item and look at the enhancement and see if it's actually compare it, see if it's actually better. It doesn't really bother me so much, you know, with the gear because I can just open up my character screen and hover over it and go, okay, well, this is better than that, this is better than that, because you don't have that immediate screen popping up. If say it's a companion piece of gear, you don't have that immediate window that pops up. Because it always shows your gear versus the showing gear. It doesn't show, even if you open up your companion tab, it doesn't show your companion thing. So I don't really mind just hovering over stuff, but, you know, with the item enhancements, you know, having to open it up, you know, open up the screen, open up the item, then check it out, it's kind of a pain. I would love to see that side-by-side comparison.
I have to read the stats and read the other stats and compare the two. It's hard.
Oh, my God. It's not a matter of having to read it. It's you have to go through a lot just to see if this one little item is really an upgrade or not. It's not hard. It's more of an annoyance, I would say, than anything else.
Yeah, I think that's what other people are feeling at this point is it's tedious, especially if you've got a lot of orange gear. I know. Not on my Empire characters, but my Jedi Knight, I have probably 4 or 5 pieces of orange gear, and trying to figure out with one piece of item enhancement that I have, you know, if it's an improvement, where is it an improvement? Right click this, show this. I've got to go back and see what the stat is. It's something that could definitely use with some thought and application as to, you know, this is the worst type of thing that you have on your gear.
Yeah.
This is what this piece is. Do you want to change it or not?
Yeah, I would like to see that. Because, well, like with your Jedi Knight, I know my Sith Warrior has got, you know, 2 orange lightsabers, the helm, boots, gloves, chest. So I'm looking at, like, 6 pieces of orange. And some of them all take, like, they all take, I believe, the mod piece. So, you know, just if I get a mod, that's, you know, I have to go through 6 pieces of gear to see if it's an upgrade for any of them. So it is kind of an annoyance, but again, it's not something that I would say they definitely shouldn't prioritize it. I agree with them not prioritizing it, but it's still something I'd like to see implemented.
Yeah.
You know what add-on I use for that? Paper and pen. I write down all the mods that are in my helmet and my chest piece and my hands. You know, what is it, +25 aim and +10 critical. And then when I get a new one, I look at it, and then I look at my add-on, which is the piece of paper that I've written with pen on it, and I see, oh, this one is better than the one in my chest piece, and then I react accordingly.
Wow, that's a great system.
Where do you download this add-on, this paper,
this pen and
you
paper.
Say?
Well, you drive to the store.
You know, you can definitely go that route. And I think that's... I've been trying not to do that, but, you know, I think either that or some kind of Excel spreadsheet or something like that to keep track of it for now. And hopefully, you know, BioWare, if you're listening, we'd all appreciate it.
Yes, and BioWare, if you're listening, I'm an avid PvPer, and I understand the need to kick people out of the starting PvP zones. Like, when you get into Hotball, you're in this room, and there's this door that you cannot go through until the game starts. Well, if you join a PvP Hotball game in progress, you have to hightail it up the hallway and up the stairs into the room. But if you take too long, say maybe you have an unnaturally long load screen or you don't see the press space bar right away, and you zone into this game, it'll flash on your screen, you must leave the beginning room or you will be kicked out. I'm like, okay, you know, I'm hightailing it up there with my little rocket boots. But then I get to the room and the door's closed. Because if you die sometimes, you know, every minute or so, the door will open and let the people who have died and, gotten alive again and lets them back out into the game. Well, I have this thing flashing on my screen to tell me to get out of the room, and I can't. There's a door. And I'm running up against that door going, you know, the minute that door disappears, I am out in the hotball. I really want to play. I'm not just here for the credits and the points. I really, really want to kill the other team. But I can't. And then my time's up, and it kicks me out. And if you're questing on Voss, and you're a bounty hunter, and you're, you know, running around punching the pink and purple dogs that are all around Voss, and then you get kicked out of a hotball game, you're not on Voss anymore. You're at the docking station on Hutta.
Ew.
Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of sucks.
And you know what, BioWare? I'm just asking for 10 more seconds. 10 more seconds for me to get up there, for that door to open, at least register that I'm moving, and that my face is planted against that door. I am ready to play Hutta, or Hutball.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think on that same note, I think that that door should actually open more often. Because, personally, I think that door stays closed a little too long sometimes.
I've been kicked out and sent to Hutta probably 3 or 4 times now. And I don't know if maybe I'm doing something wrong, or my computer's a little slow, or I have to, I watch for that press space bar to get out of the load screen, because I'm scared I'm going to end up back on the docking station in Hutta.
Yeah, that's a bit of a pain. I have to agree. I would love to see them change that.
I think that's that. Out of all the being on a PvP server and playing PvP all the time, that is my biggest complaint. At least I wouldn't even mind being kicked out, because I there's no penalty. You could just sign right back in again. At least put me back on Voss.
Agreed.
Yeah, that's a little extreme.
Yeah, I mean, I can kind of understand why you're on Hutta. They're like, well, you know, Hutball takes place on Hutta, so we threw you out the door, so naturally you're going to be on Hutta. But, I mean, come on. Send us back. You know where we came from. Put us back.
Yeah.
All right, well, cool. All right, so let's move on to the MMO water cooler. There's just a few things we're going to hit today in the water cooler today. First up, not necessarily game-related, but company-related, I don't know if you guys heard, but looks like Blizzard took a look at itself financially and infrastructure-wise and decided they needed to cut costs, so the most effective way to cut costs would be to get rid of 600 employees, which kind of sucks. It sucks to hear anybody losing their job, obviously, but unfortunately it does make more sense to cut costs in the employee area due to wages, insurance, all the way down to used office supplies and the amount of electricity they use to keep the lights on because a certain amount of employees are there. So it kind of makes sense, but I'm... again, I don't like seeing anybody having to lose their job. The only thing that I think was kind of odd, but kind of understandable because it's where they make a lot of their money, is the World of Warcraft development team will not be affected by the cuts at all. So, if you're a developer and you work in the World of Warcraft section, your job is safe.
But everybody else hates you.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I think it's tough for a company as big as Blizzard, you know, especially they've gone through a rapid growth in the past 5 or 6 years with the success of World of Warcraft, and it's easy for some of your overhead staff, be it marketing or just office management staff or human resources, to get ahead of what you need for kind of your stable employee size. So as you kind of reach a plateau, you're not really hiring anymore. You're not maybe going out and publicizing a particular game as heavily as anymore. Or, you know, you're coming back down into an equilibrium of things. That's kind of the natural attrition that a big company will go through. So, you know, like Ray said, it's tough to see anybody lose their job, but I think it's kind of a natural thing for a company this size.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, like I said, it does suck. I you know, I went a long time without having a job, so I know what not having a job is like. Again, it's kind of the nature of the beast. You know, a company gets really big, they grow dramatically real quick, and then they have to go, okay, we're way up here, but we've got a lot of costs, and we have to make sure we keep a good profit. Where do we need to cut stuff? And unfortunately, it does seem like a lot of the first things to go are employees. Because it's not just, you know, eliminating that one person's wage, it's everything that attaches to having those people. Because say, you know, a business cuts off, say they normally run 3 shifts, well, they cut off the 3rd shift. Well, not only are you saving money on the wages, but the insurance you were paying them, plus you're shutting off power, so you're saving power on your electric bill as far as, because you don't have people there, you're not running stuff. You know, you've got a huge amount of things attached to one group of people or one person. So it always makes sense, even though it's, in my opinion, the worst thing to do as far as cutting costs, is actually the most cost-effective thing to do. So, but, you know, what are you going to do? I just hope that those 600 people find something relatively quickly, because I do know that even though the job market in the country is kind of, well, not the best, it has improved a little bit, so hopefully they get something quick. And hopefully they've got some kind of, I didn't see if they did or not, but hopefully they've got some kind of a severance package or something, to where they're not just, you know, this is your last check, have a nice day.
Well, and Blizzard on your resume will probably get snatched up pretty quickly.
Oh, sure, sure. Well, another thing going on, this is actually also Warcraft related. Right now, there's, it seems to me like it's gotten big again because they're getting close to another expansion, and, you know, people have run the raids, and people are kind of getting, I don't know, a little cabin feverish. So the Ironman competitions have gotten big again. Now this time's Ironman competition goes from level 1 to 85, and there are quite a few rules. The rules are now to accomplish this. Now there has they just interviewed somebody on one of the other websites. I can't remember what it is, but somebody had done it. They did a big interview with him and how he accomplished it. And I know he took several tries because the big requirement is no deaths at all for any reason. It doesn't even matter if it's a glitch. If it registers a death, that character's out. And I know he said he tried a level 16 and died at level 16 on a quest he'd never done before. So, you know, he had to adjust. So, but the rules for the Iron Man competition, for those who do listen to us and do play Star Wars and are big fans of us, but also play Warcraft, the competition rules are as follows. All your gear must be either white or gray. No heirlooms or anything else of any sort. No gear transfer, or no gears, items, or monies can be transferred to your character from any other character, even in one of yours. Nothing. No item enhancements, so no sockets, no gems, no enchants, no reforging. Nothing. The only exception is, if you're a rogue, you can use poisons. It's class-specific item abilities like poisons. No talents. Forget you even have a talent tree. No glyphs. Even with your pet, if you're a hunter or whatever, no talents at all. That tree stays blank. No professions or secondary skills, with the exception of first aid. They did make a first aid exception, which is nice. No potions, flasks, or elixirs, except for those that are labeled as a quest item. If it's something you have to use for a quest, say underwater breathing or whatnot, that's fine. No food buffs or any other external buffs. That includes buffs from items or from other players. So you can't go running through and somebody throws a buff on you. Busted. No grouping or assistance from other characters, even if you're not grouped. So you're on your own. You can't even go, well, I wasn't grouped up, but he helped me anyway. No. No help. You're on your own. No dungeons or raids. No battlegrounds or arenas. So there's no cheating by powering through stuff, by running instances or battlegrounds or whatnot to get that extra experience. Especially you don't want to do battlegrounds because you're going to die, and you definitely want to avoid that. No guilds, with the exception of guilds designed for the Iron Man stuff, because they want you to have no guild perks, no extra XP, nothing. No recruiter friend activities. So there's no cheating with the extra, oh, well, I'll give you extra levels. No. No add-ons that can assist in combat or leveling. So, again, they're keeping it bare minimum, and I guess, and of course, the biggest one, no deaths. If your character dies for any reason, it is completely disqualified. So, for those that you know, are big Star Wars fans and do listen to us, which I'm thankful for you guys out there listening to us, if you do play Warcraft and you're kind of bored and interested in something like this, there's guilds out there doing it. Give it a try. I know the first time they did Iron Man's, I know I did try it once, but I died and just kind of gave up. But it's something that's a challenge, something different to do. So that's going on.
Is it just me, or does that sound exactly like Vanilla WoW? When I first started playing, I had never played an MMO before, especially not talent trees and buffs, and I had no idea what was going on. I think I was level 40 before I realized you could even put talent points in. Probably another 20 levels before I even understood what they were. I think I pressed M for map, but I pressed N instead, and the talent trees popped up, and I was like, oh, what's this? Click randomly and fill in the dots. You know? I think an Iron Man would be fun. I know at, when we were in Dunder Mifflin, we tried the arena, the five-man tournament instance.
Oh, yeah.
In all white and gray, and it was brutal. I think we were on heroic, and it was brutal. I don't think we finished it. I think we got up until... the Death Knight boss, I think he's the last one, and it was awful. I mean, especially because I was healing it in white and gray, level 40 gear. You know, my bonus healing is like 230 instead of 3,000. It was terrible.
I remember that well. That was
but
a lot
I'm
of fun.
I'm telling you, I don't think I ever laughed so hard watching, you know, Okami as the hunter just get one-shotted by this Death Knight. Oh, good times.
That's going to be tough. I remember, I think, one of the last characters that I was leveling, I think I got to maybe level 16 and croaked it. You know, I just got, you know, swamped by a bunch of mobs or something like that. I can't imagine, you know, going through, you know, maybe Searing Gorge or into the first, the Howling Fjord, going into Northrend or something like that, that you just have mobs everywhere coming at you.
Yeah.
Of how you survive that in white or gray gear, that's got to be brutal.
Well, I think you just have to work smart, not hard.
Yeah.
As I know, I made a paladin, and I think I made it to like level 30 something. Now I had heirloom gear and whatnot on, but I made it to level 30 without dying. And I think that if you were to do this in, well, because paladins, you know, they can do anything. But I think that if you were to do this in white or gray gear, you would just have to stay a zone behind where you should be. So that
yeah.
The mobs are just a lot easier to kill, and the quests are green. And even if the crests are gray, the one you have in your log is gray. It won't give you any experience, but the next one will. You know, if it's a chain.
Yeah.
It will definitely take a long time. You're not going to be able to power level with white and gray, but I could see it being doable. I could see level 30s running around, I don't know, a level 20 area. Now, with Cataclysm, I don't remember what the level 20 areas are. But I could see it being very doable until you got up until the Cataclysm areas, because I used to drop dead all the time.
Regularly.
Yeah. But roll a class that can heal yourself, like a paladin or a druid, and I think you'd be pretty good.
Yeah, I think you would. I know the guy that I read the interview with. He was a hunter, and he always had he always picked up some kind of a tanking pet, as well as a DPS pet, so that he always had something that would kind of protect him a little bit. So there are ways to do it. Now, I would like to see something like this implemented in Star Wars at some point, say in a couple months, because it's still difficult. I would love to see that kind of thing happen, just for fun. See if anybody's out there trying to do it, or if anybody's listening and thinks that'd be an interesting idea, get it started. I know I'd try it. Again, I think it would be difficult, especially with the game being so new, and there's still a certain difficulty on it with good gear. I think it would be something different and fun to do.
I think the majority of the people in Star Wars are still leveling. It's only been out for 2 months, and I find a lot of people have already gotten to the high end and the raiding and the nightmare modes. But I think the majority of the people are already leveling just their first tune. I think it'll be a while before an Iron Man pops up in Star Wars.
Sure. I know you're 100% right as far as some of the guilds are just now getting into, they've just cleared all the raids or some of the raids, or I'm sorry, the operations. I know the guild we're in on with our mains over on PvP server, Scions of the Empire. I know they were just, at least they were talking about just starting to do some nightmare mode. So I know that there are guilds out there that are just starting to do that kind of stuff. Which is cool. It's 2 months in and there's still stuff. For the people that are progressing relatively quickly through the content, there's still stuff for them to do, and there's still challenges for them to do, and that's great. I just think it'd be it's another thing to put on the back burner as far as, well, we've kind of done everything, we've kind of killed everything, now what are we going to do? Well, let's make ourselves a guild challenge, let's do an Iron Man. Just something extra.
I still have to go back and explore all the areas and find all the codexes for all the areas, and all the datacrons, and all the lore objects.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. There's just so much in the game to do to really keep yourself, for lack of a better term, keep yourself busy playing the game. There's so many things that are fun to do that just for somebody to sign on and go, I'm bored, I don't get it. I've actually seen that in general chat before, and everybody just bombarded him with, what do you mean you're bored? And people would just list off all the different kinds of things you can do.
Log off and go read a book.
Yeah.
I used to have a macro for that in Warcraft. Bored? Press Y on your keyboard. You'll get a list of fun, exciting, and challenging achievements.
Yeah, there's just a lot to do. And lastly, I want to talk about is, I don't know if there's any fans of Guild Wars. I know I still play Guild Wars. I've played it for quite a while. Not constant. I do play it off and on. I haven't played it for about a month or so, but I do play it. But just recently, Guild Wars 2 has opened up signups for its future beta events, which is awesome. As soon as I found out about it, I went and signed up because I want to check out Guild Wars 2, because I have no problem playing multiple games. Star Wars will always have my main focus. But then I'll always, I'll go back and I'll play Guild Wars, or I'll try Guild Wars 2, or, I still play Star Trek Online from time to time. The big thing is, in the first 48 hours after they opened the signups for the future beta, they got over 1 million applications.
Oh,
so
wow.
I'm not the only one excited about Guild Wars 2, clearly. Players that are accepted into the beta will be able to participate in the beta, which will be a closed event, to the end of March. Looks like they're going to have it set up in segments as far as beta testing. They're going to have it in multiple groups. Now, I don't know if they're going to do like Star Wars did with the beta comes in certain blocks for, you know, so, and in each block, they would basically recruit a certain amount of people off of a list to go into that beta, or if they're just going to keep expanding it, or I'm not sure exactly how they're doing that. Anybody's interested in that, you know, you can go to the Guild Wars website and sign up for the beta and get more information about it. But this is a game that, you know, I've been playing Guild Wars for, like I said, I've been playing Guild Wars for a while. It's a lot of fun. There's a lot of neat aspects of it graphically as well as gameplay wise. So Guild Wars 2, I've kind of followed it a little bit, and it looks like it's going to be a big jump, so I'm really kind of excited to see how this is going to play out.
I've never really played Guild Wars. I mean, I know I messed around with it on your account a little bit, but I never really got into it.
Yeah, I always thought it was kind of fun. There's a lot of the same aspects you see in a lot of the different MMOs. One of the things I liked is, you, like with Warcraft, you choose a paladin. Well, and then you choose whether you want to be a paladin healer or a paladin tank or whatnot. Well, with this, it's more of a, well, I choose, for those who haven't played Guild Wars, say it's like choosing a Sith warrior, and then as you go a couple levels, you get a quest, you go, all right, well, I want to specialize in another style, so I'm gonna make my guy a Sith warrior with a hybrid abilities from a Sith Inquisitor. So you can kind of, it's kind of like a class combination. You can kind of combine some of the attributes from another class into your class. I thought that was really kind of cool, but I'm really interested to see how Guild Wars 2 is going to play out, especially with over a million people already hitting the beta signs up in the first 48 hours. There's a lot of people out there interested, so which means they're probably really aware of their fan base, and they're really aware of it. So I hope that they play it kind of like Star Wars did, and they kind of take their time and get it done right, because I know I waited for a long time for Tor to hit, and I think they did a great job, and I'm glad they took the time that they did because of how it looks, how the gameplay plays out, the effectiveness, there's always things you can improve on, but you're always going to have that with a game.
That's why they have patches.
Yeah, I think they did a great job with Star Wars. I mean, I'm thrilled. I'm very happy with it. I just hope they do the same kind of thing with Guild Wars 2.
Now, I think the original Guild Wars was just a one-time, you buy the game and that's it. Did they have a subscription, or is Guild Wars 2 expected to have a subscription?
I'm not 100% sure about Guild Wars 2. I know Guild Wars is still free to play. You just buy the game, and then you can play without having to pay a dime. You get three, I think it's just three character slots. I know that's what I have. Which is fine, you know, you don't have to have 10 or 15 slots. Three is a good amount, especially for something free to play. You don't see any, at least for me, my perspective, you don't see any of the hindrances you do in other games that go free to play, because Guild Wars has been free for so long. You're not really hindered at all in the game by it being a free to play game. Now, is Guild Wars 2 free-to-play? I don't know.
I believe it will be free-to-play. You will just have to purchase the game.
Okay. Because I wasn't able to find a definitive answer, but that's good to know that it probably will be. Being if it is free-to-play, that's another thing that will get me to probably pick that game up to at some point. Because it is nice to have a good MMO that, if money's a little short for some reason, you still have a good game to play. to hold you over until you can, you know, pick up that subscription like the next month or a couple weeks later or whatever.
When it's Words always... with Friends on Facebook just won't cut it anymore, you can always go to Guild Wars too.
Exactly. It's always nice to have a fallback on games. As much as I enjoy playing games, because I've come to accept the fact that I'm addicted to games. I sat down and wrote down a list of all the gaming consoles I've had since I was a little kid, and I think I had almost all of them since the Atari 2600. The list was a lot longer than I like to accept or will ever admit.
I can tell you, in our house, we would get rid of the cable before we got rid of the internet.
Absolutely. So that's a big form of entertainment for me is games. So having that nice backup of a free MMO to play is very appealing for me. So that's one of the, so if it is free to play, I will definitely be picking it up at some point. But again, I hope they take their time and get this done right. All right. Well, that's pretty much it for the water cooler. Anything else you guys want to cover? Something going on in the MMO world you want to go over a little bit, talk about, or flesh out a little bit or anything?
I don't think so.
I think I'm all set.
I did my complaining about PvP, so I'm good.
All right. Well, that concludes the second edition of the Button Mashers of the Empire podcast. Thanks for listening and thanks for tuning in. We are downloadable on iTunes as well as from the Button Mashers podcast site. You can either listen to it streamed there or download it. You can also check us out on our blog at buttonmashersoftheempire.blogspot.com and follow us on Twitter at blogbmote. Thanks, guys. It was a lot of fun, and catch you in 2 weeks for the next podcast.
Oh, wait, hold on. I'd like to add in my... You can catch me on thegamersfridge.com, or you can email me at gamerfridge@gmail.com, or you can contact me on Twitter at gamerfridge.
Mike, you got anything else you want to add in?
I think I'm all set.
He has a fear of social networking. So if you'd like to contact Mike, feel free to contact Nikki at thegamersfridge.com or on Twitter at gamersfridge.
Yeah, you can also contact me through the Button Mashers blog. So, you know, if you have a comment or question for any of us, go to either gamersfridge or buttonmashersoftheempire.blogspot.com and shoot us an email, and we'll get back to you. Catch you guys later.
Take care.
Bye-bye.